TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. If you're a golf lover, join in on fun discussions about golf. From the perspective of two plugged-in Minnesota golf geeks, Brad Cole and David Branstad, this is 10,000 Swings.
Welcome to 10,000 Swings. I'm Brad Cole.
And I'm David Branstad.
We have a lot of great things to talk about today, but we want to start off first with revisiting our 30 for 30 talk last week. We had a conversation regarding the 30 for 30 that came out about Michael Vick, and then what golf 30 for 30s we'd like to see. And we received some feedback from people across the country, and one of the ones that we totally missed on, the 2002 Minnesota men's golf team.
We completely spaced on that one, especially being from Minnesota.
They've been told they're not going to have a program anymore. The program is going away. You've got kids from all over the country, all over the world, and all of a sudden we're not going to have this program. And what do?
They came out and won the national championship.
Are you kidding me? I mean, just going and qualifying for nationals is a big deal in the golf college realm. But to go and win nationals after being told you're not going to have a program, that's fantastic. That 30 for 30 would be very, very entertaining.
I'm kind of shocked, Brad, between the two of us, how we did not come up with that as a topic. That was such a storyline that year. I mean, nationally, that was a storyline. I mean, that is very, very unheard of.
I was just too caught up in the Anthony Kim. I had already written that one. I was so ready to go. So another few that we had sent in from other people, and also some additional thoughts that we had. Ian Poulter, IJP Design, he started his own clothing line, and then all of a sudden it went away, I don't know, 5 to 10 years later?
Something like that. It didn't last very long.
Greg Norman could be a fascinating one. You could do a Greg Norman 1996 Masters alone could be one.
Final round?
Yeah. I mean, that was, but think about the
77. Yeah, I mean, that was a disaster.
It was hard to watch. I remember being a junior golfer watching that and thinking, I don't know if I want to play competitive golf anymore. Also, taking it from being a successful golfer and to his vineyards and what he's done with the vineyards and all his other endeavors, very impressive. That could be a fascinating story.
I mean, Greg Norman's post-golf career is very, very impressive. You know, it got me thinking with this 30 for 30 stuff, and I was caught up in the golf and gambling because I still want to see something on it. But then I started thinking, there's a lot of other really good stories out there. Lee Trevino was struck by lightning. Ben Hogan had 64 total wins, but 11 of those came after he was hit in a car accident on a lonely road, and that included 6 majors and 3 in 1 year. What does that look like if he's on a car accident? I mean, Brad, how many wins does he have?
That's a great question. Could he have gotten to 100?
I don't know. I mean, he's arguably, if you look at the golf swing, he's modernized what we believe the golf swing should be. And I don't know. I think the sky would be the limit for them. You also have Paul Azinger, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, came back and won the Sony Open by 7 shots. You know, the one I hope I never see, and I think he may have rewritten it a little bit this week, Jordan Spieth.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan Spieth went from being so dominant for a few years stretch there. And, we'll talk more about Jordan later in the show, but that is, you know, what, real quickly, on the 30 for 30, what would be the number one thing you'd want to talk about with Jordan Spieth?
His putting. I think he's had the yips at some point.
Wow. It's pretty incredible he's been able to keep his card and do as well as he has if he's got the yips, because guys I know that have the yips struggle to break 80.
Here's why I say that. When you watch Jordan putt, he looks at the hole half the time he's putting, but there's no rhyme or reason to when he looks at the hole. I think he feels the yip coming on, and that's when he looks at the hole.
Wow.
Just my opinion. I don't know. Yeah, I could be completely wrong.
It's a really interesting take. So we go to Pebble Beach. Awesome tournament. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
Love it. One of my favorite events of the year.
And just a beautiful background. A little chilly this week, but a beautiful background for every round. Phil Mickelson, coming into this week, had won the event 5 times. If he wins again this past week, he ties Mark O'Meara. He's already tied with Mark O'Meara for the most wins of this event. That would have broken the record to get 6. Phil hasn't won since a year ago when he was 48, so he's 49 now. Won last year, he hadn't had a top 10 since last year's win at this event, and really struggled the past year. The start of this year, came out, missed his first two cuts, and then he goes over to Saudi Arabia, took third, and then showed up this week and was right in it till the end. What did you think about Phil's performance this week?
I'm mixed on it. Score-wise, obviously, he did really well. Ball-striking-wise, he was all over the map. I mean, he had some of the best up-and-downs I've ever seen in my life, and I think Phil's going to tell you the same. He said that bunker shot that he hit on, was that Saturday, was the second-best bunker shot he's ever hit in his life. But when you're holing out and you're getting up and down, you hit nine greens and shoot 67, something like that?
With nine greens.
With nine greens in regulation.
If I hit nine greens, I'm shooting 80. Right?
I'm shooting higher than that.
So, you know, some fun storylines here. Jason Day, you know, didn't win in 2019 at all. He was right there. He actually talked about how he'd been considering retiring early because of all his back issues.
Which is crazy.
We hate hearing that.
But I get it. And I think I mentioned this last time. Jason Day's swing does get a little violent, and it doesn't bode well for someone with a back problem. But to think of him retiring, I don't want to see that.
No. Like I said, Phil at age 49, incredible. Turning 50 shortly. There's just a lot of good stuff. Nick Taylor had only won one event on tour going into this. And a lot of people not familiar with Nick Taylor. So they go into Sunday, and it really looks like it's going to be a two-man show at the beginning of the day. They both start off, Phil and Nick are two or three under each through the first few holes. Everything's going pretty well for both of them.
Then the wind starts blowing 14 miles an hour into their face.
Yeah, it was very intense. And all of a sudden, both of these guys, we saw Phil hit multiple iron shots 30 yards over the green.
Yeah. It was 45 on that one. I don't know if that's misjudging wind. I don't know if that's adrenaline. I don't know what it is, but there were some bad shots hit.
Yeah, it was hard to watch all that as they started struggling. And so Nick Taylor had the lead after the first round, after the second round, after the third round, and after the fourth round. Wire-to-wire tour winner, so hard to do.
Who was the last wire-to-wire winner at this event? Do you know?
No clue.
Phil.
Last year?
2005. He went wire-to-wire. He shot 19 under, the exact same score as Taylor did, and won by four shots, just like Taylor did.
How about that? Wow. That's incredible. So Taylor gets his second win on tour. Kevin Streelman ended up finishing second, and then Phil fell back to third. He went five over on the last 11 to lose by five.
Well, how about Taylor? He double bogeys a par five, and Phil can't even make anything up on it, really.
The door was wide open there.
Wide open.
So the pro-am portion of this event, and the way the event works is you have one celebrity and then one pro in each group. And sometimes they're celebrities, sometimes they're business owners, different people, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
But one am and one pro in each group. It's two-person best ball. And then you play with another group. So you have four in the group. The pro-am portion was won by Kevin Streelman and Minnesota's own Larry Fitzgerald.
Again.
So serious conversation here. Larry Fitzgerald goes out, plays some great golf, really steady. Everything was going really well for him. But a couple years ago, after they won, some changes were made to his handicap.
Yep.
They go out and win again, and they won. What, they win by four or five strokes? It was,
I don't remember what
it was. A pretty decent margin. How many conversations will there be before he gets to tee it up again next year about his handicap?
Club Pro Guy posted this morning, this is why I don't post scores, with a picture of Larry. Anyone who's played a net golf tournament knows that this is going to be a conversation.
Yeah, no,
that is what it is. And you know what? He's going to have to welcome it. But to him, congrats. Own it. He won.
They were fun to watch. It was some good stuff. So if you're going to play in this event, David, and you get to play with one am, and then you're going to play with another pro and an am, who do you want your pairing to be?
This is so easy, and you can mix my pairing up. I don't even care who it is. I'm playing with Justin Timberlake and Jimmy Fallon. My pro, I don't even know if I care. This is me being the pro with one of them. Maybe Phil, because he's talkative, he's funny, he gets it. But I want to spend the 5 hours a day with JT and Jimmy Fallon. And you know what? Let's history of rap this. I want the camp bits. I might not be able to play golf.
You guys going to go to Camp Winnipesaukee? Is that?
You think we're not?
I love it. That's awesome.
How about you?
I'm going to go a different direction. So I'm a huge hoops guy.
Yeah, you are.
I am going to be paired with Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Karl Anthony Towns.
You can't afford to be in that game.
So I'll be the pro. I'll let Kat be my amateur. And then Tiger and MJ are going to play with us. So many different directions I want to go with this. Just being able to play with Tiger at Pebble, I think, would be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hanging out with Michael Jordan, out of this world.
Out of this world. Like I said, I don't think you can afford that game, but...
And then Kat, because I want to hear Kat break down the big trade this last week and all of his excitement around what the Wolves are doing to help him. And then I want to hear MJ and Tiger beat him up and talk about how he needs to be tougher, et cetera, et cetera.
They're going to crush him. I hate to say it, but they are going to absolutely beat him down.
If Kat is out because, you know, the Wolves are traveling, I'm going Charles Barkley. And I don't even know if I'll watch any of his shots. We might just go get our room at the Bellagio and just go a total different direction and start playing some cards.
I've only been to the Bellagio twice. Both times I've seen Charles Barkley there.
That's awesome. So in this event, they play three different courses. They play one round at Spyglass Hill, one round at Monterey Peninsula, and one round at Pebble Beach. They make a cut after the 3 days, and there's both cuts for pros and teams. So it's kind of a different format, kind of fun.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool to mix up and play different courses.
I haven't seen much of Monterey or Spyglass, but of these three, I have to personally, Pebble's my favorite. Yours as well? Or
I'm actually going opposite. I love Pebble. Pebble's amazing, and I have personal ties to Pebble, but I like Spyglass. Spyglass to me is, you've been to Bandon Dunes, right?
Yep.
But Spyglass to me is Bandon Dunes, Pacific Dunes, Bandon Trails, all mixed in one. I kind of like the dunesy effect that they have at Spyglass. I mean, Pebble, we can't ignore Pebble. It's amazing. And the views there are incredible, but I'm going to go Spyglass.
So on 18 at Pebble, that's probably one of my favorite shots in golf. Or I shouldn't say shots, but the whole hole.
The whole hole is amazing.
Everything you have to negotiate there. What's your favorite shot at Pebble?
I've got two. Second shot on six, because the blind shot from a downhill lie up to that quick rise over that canyon. Second shot on eight, which is Jack Nicklaus's quoted favorite shot in golf. It's a 120-yard carry over what I'm going to call basically death. If you miss that at all, you are done. The tee shot there, though, also is no joke. There's a lot of it. I mean, 18's another one, though. I mean, tee shot's amazing. Remember, what was the story? I can't remember. Was the U.S. Open? What event it was? Tiger was on 18, and he had one ball left in his bag?
Correct. Stevie had him down to
Stevie one. Had him down yeah. to one ball?
Yeah. That's. I believe that was the year he won by 15, correct?
I think so, yeah.
And what are the views, like every time I turn on Pebble Beach, my wife always says, man, this is, I could look at this all day long.
That's
it's just
incredible.
What's your favorite view?
Hands down, it's from the Stillwater Bar and Grill. Stillwater Bar and Grill, for those of you who aren't familiar with Pebble Beach, it sits up, I think it's about the second level of whatever the Pebble Beach Resort is, and overlooks all of Hole 18, all of Monterey Bay. I had lunch there with my now wife. We got engaged a couple hours later. Hands down, most expensive lunch of my life. We had 68 degrees, sunny, no wind, and we sat there probably 2 hours, two bottles of wine. I can't remember what that thing cost, and I don't want to remember what that lunch cost.
No, it's a pretty cool place. So in your opinion, is Pebble worth the money? If someone's thinking about making the trip, do you think it's worth it?
I don't know. I guess it depends on where you place value. I mean, what's Pebble now? It's got to be... Last time I checked, I called there once to go play a same trip, and I said, is there an industry rate or courtesy? And said, yeah, $550. I'm like, all right, well, no. So for me, no, it's not worth it, because I think there's other courses out there I'd rather play that are a better value. I don't know on that one, but think of it this way. If you're going out to Pebble Beach, how do you tell your wife you just spent $700 on a round of golf?
That's a tough one.
What does your wife say to that?
That's a tough one. that's a mortgage payment. That's a big deal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's two car payments.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, but
I don't know. Do you think it's worth it?
I've never played it, so I think if I got the chance I probably would do it once.
Once? I'd agree with playing once and
do
that's
it once to say that it's what people know about golf. It's a very well-known course. It's an awesome view. I don't know that I would probably play it a whole lot of times at that price, but
I would probably rather bribe somebody the same amount of money to get on Cyprus.
I've heard good things about Cyprus. So always fun to have Pebble in the mix. Very, very fun week. And we got some fun inside the ropes information this week. So Larry Fitzgerald wins the Pro-Am portion with Kevin Streelman. He's from Minnesota, as most people know. Really, really good human being. Great athlete. His caddy is actually the husband of one of the apparel buyers at Pebble Beach. So it's kind of cool. He's been on the bag for him for years. And the caddy picks him up at the hotel every morning in his Volkswagen Jetta.
Which is awesome.
And the caddy actually reads, because they play with Kevin Streelman every year, the caddy actually reads Streelman's putts as well, which I thought was pretty impressive. So Streelman takes second this week, and him and Larry have got a really good thing going there, and he's getting an insider that's reading putts for both of them. I was pretty impressed. So I thought that was a very fun little inside the ropes story that not everyone knew. And again, the sandbagging we talked about earlier, Larry's been accused of sandbagging. I'm sure plenty of people are going to say more now this year after he won again.
Every AM that's ever won a net event gets accused of sandbagging.
Absolutely.
It's just the way it is.
Absolutely. Another cool, not everyone knows, a little tidbit on Kevin Streelman. His former caddy is Mike Christensen from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Is it really?
Yeah. Mike played at Duke and was on the mini tours, and then caddied for Streels for a while, and now Mike's back in the actually in the Metro, playing out of Bunker Hill. So, fun little nugget there. There were some awesome shots of the week this week. I personally saw Phil chip in on 13 and 14 on Saturday, back to back chip in birdies from 15 to 30 yards away. I mean, the guy's missing greens and making birdies.
Which Phil did. What Phil did was just an example of how bad his ball striking was. I mean, yes, shots of the week, absolutely. It's all his short game. Shot of the week for me, Larry the Cable Guy. Skulls one out of a bunker, ricochets it off a grandstand and back onto the green. Almost made the putt, by the way, too, from 20 feet.
Which is fantastic. So on number 18, Tony Romo, I saw this one on Saturday. Tony Romo's greenside. Just got to open the face a little bit, dig deep. Catches it right in the forehead, skulls it over the green, into the grandstand, plays
that.
Plinko, goes down into the beach. He's seaside, and he just kind of he signaled like it was a touchdown with his hands or like it was good from a field goal. It was very, very funny reaction to it. He handled it well, but that had me thinking. So that was on Saturday. That was the debut of the new XFL, and XFL, I don't know if anyone saw it this weekend. If you're an XFL player now, I saw a kicker miss a kick, come off the field, and 5 seconds later getting interviewed about how they missed that kick.
Think of playing a round of golf, and all of a sudden you shank one, or you skull one over the green, and all of a sudden you've got DL3 with a mic in your face.
Amanda,
what did you think of that?
Amanda Baleonis asking you why you just hit three out of bounds.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that? So
it's because I tried. It's what I wanted to do. What, I mean, are you kidding me?
So as Tony Romo did this, and I'm thinking about what happened in XFL, I mean, what would this be like if we had this on the tour, and guy three putts from 5 feet? What were you thinking as you blew it by two times?
I miss, I make.
So it would have been fantastic, and especially if they had done it with Romo, just because he's an announcer and a whole other deal. So that was great. I also saw another shot of the week that I got a kick out of. Phil on number 7, they're calling it maybe the best shot of his career. Can you talk a little more about that one, Dave? Did you see that?
Which one on 7?
The one on Saturday is up and down on hole number 7. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that one.
It's just a terrible lie, and he says the second best bunker shot of his
life. Oh, the bunker shot, yeah.
Yeah.
The bunker shot was incredible. I mean, the lie was, it was like half buried, half fried egg. How in the world did you even get that onto the green, much less what he did, is unbelievable. And he did. He called that the second best bunker shot of his life, and I agree. That is almost impossible. There's no amateur out there that can hit that type of shot. I'd actually argue there's only a handful of professionals that can hit that type of shot.
So performances of the week, saw a lot of different things. One of the ones in a negative way that I saw, Ryan Brehm on Sunday had a great tournament going. He got himself to 5 under for the tournament going into the final round. Just needs to play a decent final round or a good final round, and he would get probably a top 10 or top 20. And he shot 15 over in the final round, which just had to be absolutely brutal. I was looking through that scorecard, and that looked just So frustrating. At the same time, though, another performance of the week, Jordan Spieth. So Spieth beat Brehm by 20 in the final round. He shot 5 under, and it must have moved up, what, 30 or 40 spots?
At least.
I think he finished 9th.
His lowest Sunday round since the Masters of last year. Thank God.
No, that was great to see. Another performance of the week. I mean, Phil's whole story this week is fantastic. His grandpa was a caddy at Pebble back in the day.
He used a marker
from his grandpa in his memory. And like I said, on Saturday, nine greens and shot 5 under. Just incredible. That to me was a performance of the week. Just the short game ability there. Fell off a little bit on Sunday. And then one other performance that I saw last week at the Champions Tour event in Morocco, Brett Quigley, playing his second Champions Tour event, won. And he had essentially no status. Could you imagine going out there and like, hey, I better win or I might not get to play again? And you do it.
I didn't even know he was still playing golf.
Yeah, Brett Quigley, nephew of Dana Quigley, kind of made it a little bit off and on the PGA Tour, had a lot of injury issues, has been doing some announcing, etc. Comes on the Champions Tour and wins. And that's, to me, is what's so fun about the Champions Tour is a lot of these guys get a second shot, whether
Absolutely.
It be a Bruce Fleischer, Hale Irwin, Gil Morgan, where they kind of reinvent themselves. Look at Bernhard Langer and what he's done out there.
Is Lumpy out there yet? Or is he a year away?
So Lumpy is not out there yet, but Lumpy was in the field this week at Pebble.
He was.
Yeah.
He did not play well.
No. The funniest thing we saw all week, watching Eli and Peyton Manning, knowing how competitive those two are and how funny those two are.
That was actually really fun to watch.
Play together. They're playing with obviously different pros, but play together / against each other for 3 days. That was a highlight for me.
See, Eli even cracked some jokes about how he's had a little bit more time to work on his game the last year.
Toby Keith. Got to see Toby Keith do some putting on Saturday. He made a putt, and as he was making the putt, takes the club, throws it up in the air, goes into the grandstand. Actually, they had to catch it for him, but he just chucks it. Just crowd was having a blast with it.
How about Macklemore?
Macklemore, unbelievable. Plaid pants.
That outfit? Plaid pants? It was plaid from head to toe.
The Gatsby cap, he's riding the scooter. It was fantastic. And one more on Toby Keith. I'm not sure if he was contractually obligated to this, but he actually had the red Solo cup next to him every time he putted. So he had the red Solo cup, I'll fill you up right there, let's have a party, every time he putted, which I thought was just fantastic. A lot of fun there.
Brad, let me ask you a question. What kind of grass were they playing on?
Poana.
Is that how you say it?
Poana.
Poa?
Poa.
Poa. How about the bit where they have tour pros trying to pronounce what kind of grass they're playing on? Did any of them get it right?
I don't think so.
I don't think one of them got it right.
No.
That's why we've all just shorted to Poa.
Poa. Makes it
easier. Poanua?
Poanua. Well, that's the way it's spelled. Yeah. It's difficult when it's spelled differently than it sounds.
Right.
One other one. Oh, man. Larry the Cable Guy was playing with Ray Romano. So they're both in the same group, which a lot of laughs there. They're mic'd up on different shots. Ray Romano, they asked him, you know, at his age, what's he trying to get out of playing golf? And he said, we're just trying to make more pars than number of trips to the Port-a-John, which if you enjoy Romano humor, that's pretty in line with him. So that's a good one.
Yeah, this goes back to the Hank Haney show with Ray Romano. That really helped.
So interesting fact of the week. We've been trying to find different ones. And I was listening to Dan Lebatard's show the other day, and they stated on the show that the average person swears 80 times a day.
Seems like a lot.
So you think about it. You're awake for, let's call it, 15, 16 hours a day. You got to think that right before you go to bed and when you're up in the morning pretty early, you're probably not swearing a ton. So let's say you got like a solid 12 hours or so of, let's call it open swearing hours. What are those 12 hours? In those 12 hours, are you clipping at 6 to 7 swear words an hour?
I'd like to think not, but the more I think about it, is this out loud swearing or in my mind swearing?
Out loud swearing.
Out loud swearing, no chance I'm that high. If I'm on a golf course, boy, let's see. Tee shot, yep. Second shot, yep. Third shot, yeah. Putt. I might hit that in 4 hours on a golf course.
Well, and it's fair to say, you know, you will shoot somewhere between 75 and 85 a round. 80 times. You might just get them all in on each shot, right?
I mean,
you're probably not going to swear when you tap in for par bogey, but you know, you might swear multiple times in other shots. So
this is starting to make me feel bad about myself and my language here.
But it's a great question, right? My dad and I feel like neither one of us swears that much. When we're on the golf course together, I feel like we kind of breed it.
Right. Well, I will say this. When you play golf with someone who does swear a lot, I think it makes you swear even more. And I have been around people that swear an absolute, I almost just swore there, on the golf course. I will swear a lot more. I had my former boss, he didn't swear a lot. He'd get on the golf course and every bad shot, he'd just say, Jack Wagon.
Jack Wagon.
Jack Wagon. That was his version of swearing. I loved it.
Oh, that's great. So to wrap up the rest of this week, Minnesotans in the tourney, Troy Merritt finished 25th. Tom Hoagie was 60th. Lumpy shot 11 over and missed a cut, but he's getting ready to go for the Champions Tour. And then for amateurs, Josh Duhamel was in the field. So he's from North Dakota, kind of huge Minnesota Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Definitely kind of a Minneapolis connection there, more North Dakota than anything. But yeah, very fun week, and we are going to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what happened this week in golf, and then we're going to talk about the new USGA distance report.
Ooh, can't wait.
Welcome back to 10,000 Swings. I'm Brad Cole.
I'm David Branstad. Let's get started.
All right, so before we went to break, we talked a little bit about what happened at Pebble this week, and we're going to go from the beautiful view of Pebble to the snow-covered Minneapolis tundra and talk a little bit about what's coming up around the corner. We've got the 30th annual Choice Bank Minnesota Golf Show right around the corner the weekend of February 21st. Get your tickets as soon as possible. Always a great way to get out and get excited for the new season. And with every advance online purchase, you actually receive 21 free green fees and a his or hers golf polo, over $700 in value for only $14.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's fantastic. We're going to have LPGA professional Kim Kaufman in town. She'll be at the show on Saturday. Kim will be interacting with attendees between 10:30 in the morning and 2 p.m. So come by and meet Kim. She's going to play some putting games, some chipping games, and she will be at the $100,000 putt contest. In addition to that, the show is a great place to just buy irons, drivers, wedges, get fitted for clubs, get early season deals on golf and golfications, and some great new apparel for the season as well. So lots of booths to check out, and the majority of the best resorts in the Midwest are there. So if you haven't been on a golf trip with your friends, come check out the golf show, learn about some of these awesome resorts that come and advertise there, and maybe book a trip for this season.
Just a great way to kick off. I know it seems like to some with the snow we had yesterday, the golf season might be a little ways away, but it's a great way to kick off the golf season and just get everybody enthused.
David and myself will be at the show on Saturday and Sunday, recording live from 10 to 12 each day. So please come meet us. Let us know if you have any questions or thoughts or things you'd like to hear on the show. And we hope to see you soon. More details for the golf show at minnesotagolfshow.com. So the last few weeks I've been talking about this PXG store opening in Southdale. And I actually went out last week to check it out on the first day. It's in Southdale Mall, right next to Lifetime, and you can actually enter it from the inside of the mall. So if you're out just casually shopping with your kids, your family, you name it, you can go in and get fit for some new irons.
Anybody can be a part of PXG now.
It's pretty cool. So 7,000 square feet, the store is just absolutely beautiful. Two hitting bays with a TrackMan and full fitting experience. They have a little player's lounge. They have a shaft wall to just see all the different shaft options. Pretty
Which
great.
Is incredible. I mean, the amount of options they have.
They have a putting green with TrackMan, so you actually can use a TrackMan to get you the best putter, which I thought was very impressive. I don't know anyone else that's doing that.
So the TrackMan putting utility now is actually really, really good. I've used it, it's incredible.
They have a full retail area, a lot of open space. They have a full staff. It was very, very busy when I went in there. They don't do things the way the other companies do. They really want you to just come in and get fit for their stuff, and they're not going to usually be at regular demo
days. Wait a second. Did you say that Parsons does not do things the way other companies do it?
Correct.
Shocking.
He does it his way. So very cool. If you get a chance, stop by Southdale. If you got some time to kill in the next couple months, it's one of five stores in the country. So a very cool experience.
You know, if you want another cool place to go visit in the winter, The new second swing, I think it's in the new, the remodeled second swing in Minnetonka is pretty cool. I don't know the number of bays they have, but it's got to be at least 6 to 8. It's a really cool place. You'll get fit for anything you're looking for. I don't believe you can get fit for PXG there, but anything else, go check it out. I mean, it's winter, guys. Let's go hit.
A lot of stuff to do to get us through the next couple months, right?
Right.
So we've been talking about the Gopher men's golf team, how they were going to be in action. They had their first event this weekend at the Big Ten match play in Florida. Unfortunately, the team lost their first two matches. They did tie their third, most notably from the trip. Angus Flanagan, 3-0 on the trip. Watch out for Angus. This kid is going to be something special.
He's good.
And so the event was, it wasn't a regular stroke play event. It was a match play event. And match play is where you play hole-by-hole matches against the other person, so you're not counting all your total strokes. And if you make a double or a triple bogey, it's not a big deal because you lose one hole rather than two, three, four, five, however many strokes.
That's the beauty of it.
It is wonderful. So, David, do you like match play or stroke play better?
Hands down, match play.
And why?
Because I have to beat one person. If I'm playing stroke play, I have to beat an entire field of people that I don't know what they're even doing at any given point. I can stand on the first tee, Brad, and look at you and in my mind say, I'm going to absolutely destroy you today. And it's one person.
Are you that guy? Are you the guy that, you know, are you doing like coins in the pocket? What are you?
No, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't put it past me, but I'm not that guy. But I will do anything to get your mind away from what you're doing. I'll stand on the first tee box. I hate to say, I used to do this in high school. I'd stand on the first tee box. You played Dahl Green, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hole 10 or 1, the par 4 straightaway downhill.
Can't remember.
It was 1 or 10, and I'd stand in that tee box and go, hey, how far do you think it is that silo way out there? And next thing you know, they're thinking, I don't know, 700-800 yards? Well, guess what they're not thinking about? What they're about to do. Did it work? It did that. I don't know if it still works now, but I love match play because I'm notorious for going par, par, birdie, quad.
Yeah.
And my quad doesn't matter. And I get more in the moment when I know if I make quad and stroke play, my chances of getting that back are slim. That's only one hole.
Yeah. No,
I like it. It keeps me in the moment better than stroke play does. How about you?
Now, I truly enjoy both, probably because of the way I play. I'm probably better suited from stroke play just because I don't do anything. I don't make a lot of birdies. I also don't make a ton of doubles. More of a grind them out par and bogey. But I enjoy both quite a bit. There's a lot of fun different ways to play match play. I mean, obviously the biggest ones are going to be Ryder Cup, President's Cup, the WGC match play, Solheim Cup, Walker Cup. But there's a lot of great stuff locally.
Anything that's team match play, I'm all in. Because not only now can I take my quad and it doesn't matter as much, I have somebody else that might be able to bail me out on any given hole.
It's fantastic. So the MPGA actually has, in Minnesota, the MPGA has the traveling teams. So you have the senior 8-man, 16-man, 20-man, 24-man. If you haven't played those and you like competitive golf, join a club. Join those teams. They are an absolute blast.
It's so much fun.
It's once a month. You get a partner. You try to give it everything you got. Worst case scenario, there might be a cold beverage afterwards. But it's a lot of fun to just play a different style of golf.
The only thing I hate about match play, from an industry perspective, is scheduling it.
Yeah.
Because stroke play, it's, hey, here's your tee time, here's your day. And match play, sometimes when it comes to those season-long things, it's coin flips.
Right. Or even like in the state match, the Players' Championship for the MGA, you don't know if you do qualify for it, you don't know if you're going to need a half a day of work off or three full days.
Right.
So it's tricky. And that's where some of those events like the Resorters.
Awesome event.
The Birchmont.
Another good one.
Pine to Palm.
Yep.
All those events are so good, but you're going to need to just take a whole week at the lake.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I would plan on doing and just commit to it.
Whether save your PTO for the summer is what we're telling you.
Whether you're done Monday morning or Friday night, just make a full week commitment to it. So, yeah, the match play to me is just, it's fantastic. This last week, we had a lot of conversation about world golf rankings, where guys are at. We've talked a lot already about, like, is Brooks the number one guy out there? Is Rory the number one guy out there? Who's the number one guy? So this last week and last night, actually, it updated. Brooks was the number one player in the world for the last 38 weeks. And now he is no longer the number one player in the world.
It's Rory.
Rory is number one again.
But neither one of them played last week.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, the world golf rankings are so complex that neither guy plays and they change.
I don't get it. And truthfully, I have not put the time in to get it, but I just want to see how that changes with neither one of them playing.
This makes the eighth time now that Rory's been number one in the world, which is incredible. Almost the first time in 5 years. He's now been number one for 95 career weeks. Faldo's done it for 97. Greg Norman at one point had 331 total weeks at number one. And Tiger Woods has been number one in the world for a total of 683 weeks. So yeah,
match that.
It's incredible. And now our new updated rankings. So we've got Rory 1, Brooks 2, Rahm, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Cantlay, Webb, Tiger, Xander, and Justin Rose filling out the new top 10.
So I was way off last week when I said Ricky was like number 2 or 3.
Yeah, that was a bold strategy, Cotton. Okay. I don't know that was...
I'm going to find out where he actually is.
I think he's somewhere in the 15-ish range, I would guess. Jordan Spieth fell out. So a week ago, Jordan Spieth fell out of the top 50 for the first time since August 2013.
Yep.
6.5 years. And as we talked about earlier on our 30 for 30, what is going on? Now, we will say, with his great comeback on Sunday, he did move back into 49th. Because there's a lot of things you miss out on by not being top 50 in the
world.
All
the WGC events, he's not going to be in if he's outside of that top. I should say all of them. The majority of them, he's not in if he's outside of the top 50. And it's good for golf to have Spieth back in the mix.
Absolutely.
Because I don't want to be, if I'm Jordan Spieth and I'm hanging out with Fowler, Thomas, and these guys are killing it, and I'm just kind of sitting there like, yeah, I just shot 74 again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, that's tough.
Kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, so in Graham McDowell, like if you win an event, Graham went from 104th to 47th just by winning at Saudi Arabia a week ago. And unfortunately, he missed the cut this last week. But, we've got Phil cracked the top 50. This is so incredible. In 1993, Phil cracked the top 50 for the first time. And he stayed there until this past November. So 26 years.
And I didn't know this until you sent this to me, but that is one of the most impressive stats I've ever heard on the PGA Tour. That is, and we've all followed Phil's career. It's up and down. It's, I miss cuts, I go win. But that for 26 years in the top 50?
Well, what would have been crazy is that if he would have gone, he took third last week. He's like 100th in the world. And he took third last week to move to 77th.
And missed the cut before that.
Right. But he moved to, from 100-ish to 72nd, and then this past week now, he moved to 55th because he took third. If he had won, he'd probably be top 35, top 40.
And so it would have just been like at least
just a couple months hiatus of being out there. So incredible. And he actually came out this week and he said he will not take a special exemption into the U.S. Open this year. He will earn it or he will not play. So he's actually said that if he doesn't qualify by playing well the rest of the season, he will show up at a local qualifier at 49, 50, whatever his official age will be at that time, and he will go out and try to beat all these young bucks.
Think of this. You've played in U.S. Open qualifiers. I've played in U.S. Open qualifiers. What if you enter that event, and now you see Phil's in there? I might not show up. I might just get to the tee and be like, unless I'm playing with him, I'm out, guys.
Well, doesn't that make Nick Taylor's win yesterday even more incredible?
Yeah, it does.
The guy hadn't won in 5 years.
5 years.
And he's only won once on tour. Essentially, not a lot of people knew about Nick Taylor. And he went out and he beat him. He flat out beat him. Very, very, very impressive. And as we look forward to this next week, so now we've got the Riviera. So an even better field this next week. In the field, we've got Tiger Woods. We've got Rory McIlroy. A ton of good players. Dustin Johnson, you name it. So, David, what do you like? The Genesis Open this week at Riviera. What do you like so much about this course?
You know what? It's a great test to anyone that plays it. It's dubbed Hogan's Alley, one of the two courses, along with Colonial, based on what he's accomplished there over the years. I think he won there 3 times in 2 years, including the U.S. Open. It's a great event, and it brings one of the best fields on tour. Every single year there. I mean, if you look at the list of players playing, it is the who's who of the PGA Tour.
No, it's great. I think it's one of those events that's almost become, it's not a major, but it's in that next category of events that are kind of right after the majors. So,
by the way, at Riviera, at the U.S. Open, Hogan won with 8 under par. That record stood in relationship to par until Tiger broke it in the year 2000.
Wow. That's impressive.
Goes back to what we talked about earlier, three with Hogan. I mean, Hogan had the potential to be the benchmark, not Sam Snead.
No, that's a really good point. Last week we talked about Phil being a favorite in the field, Max Homa, Graham McDowell, Dustin Johnson. Phil took third. Homa played pretty well. Graham missed the cut. I think DJ didn't do his best on the weekend. But that being said, who do you like this week at Riviera? Who's your take?
I got two picks, if I'm allowed two picks.
Okay.
Jason Day, because I think he's finally found comfort in his game again. His back's been a little bit better. Like we talked about earlier, he talked about retiring. He felt better. He's finally playing the game he used to play. So I like Jason Day there. I also think JB Holmes, he's had a pretty good start to the year, and I think he's due for a pretty big breakthrough.
Yeah, no, JB played well again last week, and he's played well at Riviera. So I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy, and that is my final answer. So we'll see how it turns out. Speaking of guys that pound it, Rory, JB, the USGA came out this last week with a USGA/RNA Distance Insights project.
Yeah, that was fun to read.
So my favorite part of this whole thing, before I even got into it, I already saw a tweet. Dustin Johnson's response was, whether or not he had read through the whole report, he goes, it's 18 pages. To be honest, I didn't read it.
Okay, so first of all, this is DJ talking. I sometimes question the intelligence level of DJ. This is why I think he's actually so good at golf, because he doesn't comprehend, oh, I'm 15 shots in lead, I'm 15 down, it's all the same. But yeah, the report's too long. Who's going to actually read the entire thing? I didn't read the entire thing. I read the snippets.
Yeah, no, it seems like it's a lot. So there's a lot of different takeaways about it. Golf.com did a full article about the 10 most important takeaways. They talked about hitting distance for players has increased and will continue to increase. Courses have gotten longer and will continue to get longer. There's a lot of different things there. One of the things that I feel is that it's okay to hit it far.
I want to hit it far. You know, I've talked about golf course designers and what we like about golf courses. I want to hit it far.
When people want to play golf, especially people that aren't serious golfers, they want to crush it. That's what they're there to do.
You want to grow this game? Let people hit it a mile. They're going to want to play more.
And it's interesting. So Webb Simpson was asked about it. Webb, who won last week, said, hey, I have no problem if you want to, you know, try to dial things in, whatever, but why do we need to work on decreasing the distance you can hit it? Why don't we just make the courses a little bit tougher, bring the fairways in a little bit, make the rough a little longer, make the greens faster, tuck the pins a little bit? And I guess my take, I get what Webb's saying from a tour perspective, but from a growing the game perspective, handicaps aren't getting that much better, right?
USGA came out with a report, I believe this was 2018. In the last 25 years, the average handicap has improved by 2 shots in 25 years. If you look at the distance gains in the last 25 years, you wouldn't think it's 2 shots. Golf is not getting easier, guys. In fact, I think golf is actually getting harder. Courses are getting tougher. You're right. A lot of courses are narrow in fairways. They're bringing in water hazards. Here's the bottom line. If I can bomb driver as far as I can, I have pitching wedge in. So what? I'm in the rough. I have pitching wedge. It's a hell of a lot easier than 7-iron out of the rough.
Yeah, I just think that as a general rule, let's not make the game tougher.
Did you see Phil's comments? Phil ripped this report and said, and he brought DeChambeau as an example. He said, wait a second here, guys. So now you're going to penalize a guy for getting in the gym, getting stronger, becoming a better athlete, and hitting it farther. Why are we the only sport that gets penalized when we become more athletic? And just rip them. Now, he also had some other comments about the USGA. No amateurs are trying to run professional sports. I don't necessarily agree with him on all that, but I do agree with him that you're penalizing people for getting better at a game. It's like counting cards. I mean, if you can count and beat the system and now you're getting penalized for it, what? Really?
That's a good reference. I really like that people are speaking out about this and showing their disinterest in trying to limit things. I do feel that courses don't need to be getting longer. I do agree with USGA in that point. I think we need to kind of limit that a little bit. But on the flip side, courses are getting longer because the ball's getting longer, the clubs are getting longer. So
they also the USGA also did come out and say, we're not interested in rolling back equipment, which they might have had to say.
Right.
Because the equipment industry is, I mean, billions of dollars.
It's a fascinating conversation. I mean, what do you think at home? If you're listening to this right now, what do you think about the USGA coming out and saying, you know what? We don't want you to hit it any further. We want to limit that.
Here's where I'll take my stand. Play the appropriate tees. If you play the appropriate tees, golf is going to be challenging and fun. If you don't play the appropriate tees, you can either A, make golf too easy because you're playing it too far up and you're just going to bomb it and hit flip wedge in the green, or you're going to play from a distance that's going to absolutely make your 4 hours on that golf course miserable.
Yeah. No, that's...
Play the right tees.
It's fascinating conversation.
And by the way, golf courses have done a better job over the last decade of having more tee options to play the right tees.
So before we go this week, we had something sent over to us from our friend Jim Peterson, sent over the YouTube video of a man
so good.
Named Patrick Barr, a.k.a. Tiger Hood.
Nappy Gilmore.
A.k.a. Nappy Gilmore, a New York City local legend. And we'll just call him Mr. Hood. He created street golf, and he's been playing street golf in the streets in New York City for years. He displays his photos on Minetta Lane, and he has them for sale in the neighborhoods on the street. It's a beautiful area. If you get a chance, go to YouTube and look up Tiger Hood. And he actually, what he did is he found a golf
this
club.
This section will be a lot better if you actually go to YouTube and watch this.
He found a golf club in the garbage can. And what he did is he took milk cartons, like from schools, a little small milk cartons, filled them with newspapers, put packing tape on them, and then he hit shots. And he make little holes called the Urban Golf Links. And so, really, really fun deal. He's actually got some sponsorship deals now from various companies. He makes his holes up and down the streets in New York City, and he has his photographs there. And people will challenge him. They play contests. I'm guessing there's probably some dollars wagered.
Let's hope so.
Very cool stuff. He actually, on one of the YouTube videos, he actually made an umbrella golf club. All sorts of creative stuff. And Will Smith actually, for one of the videos, Will Smith joined him and competed with him. And it was kind of cool. Will said that, I believe it was from I Am Legend,
yep.
where he played
yep.
golf on the at the airplane hangar. Kind of a cool deal. So what'd you...
So first movie reference I found out of this. This reminds me of Caddyshack 2.
Nice.
Worst sequel to a movie ever. In the history of movies, it's the worst. Someone challenged me on that, but you're not going to find a worse sequel. They were playing golf in the middle of the city, right?
Absolutely.
This is a way cooler version of Caddyshack 2. I'd rather watch this YouTube video 1,000 times than watch that movie again.
So where's the craziest place that you've played golf?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I can tell you the craziest thing I've ever done playing golf. This makes me sound really stupid. Pep rally, senior year of high school, and I laid on my back on the floor with a tee in my mouth and a golf ball, and I had a teammate hit a driver off of it.
How'd that turn out?
I'm here. Let's put it that way. Not my proudest moment, but not the stupidest thing I did in high school.
One of my favorite spots in high school and college during tournaments, we'd putt in the hallways, you know, take the glass, the glass from the room and putt into that up and down the hallways. But my friend Mune's cabin, he's actually got a raft that's about 94 yards, give or take a couple yards away. And we hit off
of course he does.
We hit off of a mat from the backyard into the lake at the raft. And we keep track of whether or not you hit the raft, and it's pretty fun. Then you go swim out there and dive, and the water's so clear you don't even need goggles. You can just dive right down.
Because of the zebra mussels.
It's a beautiful, beautiful opportunity to just hit wedges all day and just kind of work on your game. So
it's a fun thing to do.
Fun ways to play golf.
I actually have a bucket of balls up at the cabin just to waste.
Just to hit into the lake?
Driver out of the sand into the lake.
Oh, it's fun. So a lot of different ways to play golf, but the way that Mr. Hood is doing it, quite fun. So go check it out on YouTube. And if you're ever in New York City, try to go find him, Minetta Lane.
Yeah.
And it looks like usually he uses a bucket or something like a bucket to hit into. And again, he's challenging people all the time to hit different shots. And really, again, another way to grow the game. We talked about Topgolf and different ways that we can just get people to play golf.
Urban golf, is this a new league?
Who knows? I mean, we'd love to hear from you. You know, what are the different ways that you've played golf? What are the different things that you've used? My one-year-old thinks that, you know, he can take a foam tube at the playground and swing at any ball, and he'll call it golf.
Hey, don't care. As long as it's whatever gets kids interested in golf, I'm all for. You know what? Let's go tee it up down Nicollet.
Hey, that could be maybe for the next Super Bowl or something that we host right in town. Maybe we do snow golf like that. I know they have snow golf out at Majestic Oaks. I believe they played something on the par three there. So some really fun ways to grow the game. So we thank you so much for tuning in to 10,000 Swings this week. As a reminder, we air at 7 p.m. on Monday nights on Score North 1500. And we're available on podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts, the Score North app, Apple Podcasts, you name it. So also, if you'd like to connect with us at 10kswings@scorenorth.com, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Brad Cole.
I'm David Branstead, and we will see you guys next time.